A 17-year-old biological female patient on testosterone said she was bleeding from the vagina. In less than an hour, she had soaked through an extra heavy pad, her jeans, and a towel she had wrapped around her waist. The nurse at the center told her to go to the emergency room right away. We found out later this girl had had intercourse, and because testosterone thins out the vaginal tissues, her vaginal canal had ripped open. She had to be sedated and given surgery to repair the damage. This is the testimony of Jamie Reed, a self-proclaimed queer gender clinic case manager turned whistleblower, about one of the many side effects of hormone therapy she witnessed during her 4 years of employment at a transgender center in a U.S. children's hospital. Since there are so many people out there who vehemently support gender ideology and medical gender transitions for children, I feel it is my duty to provide the public service of educating those people on just what a gender transition entails. Because, you know, I don't want anyone out there blindly supporting stuff they don't understand so that they can increase their social credit while simultaneously decreasing their personal accountability. So what does a gender transition look like? Let's talk about it. Sex reassignment surgery, or SRS for short, whether female to male or male to female, begins with a psych evaluation from a therapist. Jamie Reed, who mostly worked with young girls, says, "To begin transitioning, the girls needed a letter of support from a therapist, usually one we recommended, who they had to see only once or twice to get the green light. To make it more efficient for the therapists, we offered them a template for how to write a letter in support of transition. The next stop was a single visit to the endocrinologist for a testosterone prescription." That's all it took. And many of these centers don't require a letter at all. After scouring the internet for more information on gender transitions, I came across several Reddit threads full of troubled youth discussing centers that cut through the red tape and hand out hormones like Halloween candy. One user even compiled a list of every informed consent clinic in the country that doesn't require a letter from a therapist. And the responses to his list were even more alarming. One commenter says, "Charleston Planned Parenthood is awesome. I got my HRT the same day that I asked for it." Another says, "I started HRT while I was living in Iowa, and the Planned Parenthood in Cedar Rapids treated me well. They weren't simple informed consent at the time, but all they required was a therapist's letter. I had a really good experience, and they prescribed my hormones on the first visit. Granted, it's been about 6 years since I got on hormones, but my experience there was as painless as possible. I walked in, told them I was trans, signed some medical forms, discussed with the doctor the expected outcomes and potential risks, and that was it. They sent me to get blood work, and once it was faxed over, they called in a script. Amazingly simple. Very positive." Now, many will tell you that hormone therapy is no big deal. The effects are completely reversible. But according to Jamie, when a female takes testosterone, the profound and permanent effects of the hormone can be seen in a matter of months. Voices drop, beards sprout, body fat is redistributed.
"I'm tired of watching my hair thin out, and it's less distressing if I shave it. So when I talk about being too far gone, I don't really know what else to call it. This is what I mean. This is how deep my voice is. it's gotten deeper over time, and it's settled. This is what I mean by hair loss. And it just keeps getting worse. It keeps thinning. It keeps receding backwards. And I'm not exactly sure that's coming back."
And those are just the intended effects. Being put on powerful doses of testosterone or estrogen, enough to trick the body into mimicking the opposite sex, affects the rest of the body as well. Sexual interest explodes, aggression increases, and mood can be unpredictable. Our patients were told about some side effects, including sterility, but after working at the center, I came to believe that teenagers are simply not capable of fully grasping what it means to make the decision to become infertile while still a minor.
I do hate to speak about it, but I'm experiencing sexual dysfunction at the age of 18. That's something that women usually go through when they're in their 40s to 50s.
Right.
How is I supposed to know?
Those who transition may also be setting themselves up for a lifetime of cholesterol medication, blood pressure medication, sleep apnea, diabetes, and even cancer. Of course, hormone therapy is child's play compared to the next steps. When girls deemed gender dysphoric in their single visit to a therapist reach 15 years of age, they can undergo a double mastectomy. After that, in many clinics, by the age of 17, they can undergo sex reassignment surgery. This is from the Boston Children's Hospital. To qualify for gender affirmation at Boston Children's Hospital, you must be at least 18 years old for phalloplasty and at least 17 years old for vaginoplasty. Patients who want to pursue chest surgery must be at least 15 years old. Now, some of you might be thinking, well, if doctors all over the world are performing these surgeries on children, they must be nearly perfect, right? I'll let you be the judge. During a vaginoplasty, that's male-to-female bottom surgery, the surgeon will use a skin graft to create a new vaginal canal, aka the inside wall of the vagina. To do this, they will take skin from your scrotum and thin it out so it works as a skin graft. If there's not enough skin from your scrotum to make your new vagina, then your surgeon will take extra skin from the sides of your abdomen where there won't be a very noticeable scar. If neither of those work, they create your new canal with parts of your colon, where one of the downsides is that your vagina will smell like an asshole. When the patient returns home from this procedure, they must partake in something called dilation. Dilation is the process of essentially inserting a dildo into your new vagina to keep it from healing over. Because no matter how many times you affirm the new hole between your legs, your body sees it as nothing more than the open wound it is. Male to female transitioners must insert this dilator into their new vagina up to several times per day for the rest of their lives. Famous male-to-female trans kid Jazz Jennings was groomed into the trans community at just 5 years old and has been exploited for financial gain ever since. He's been sharing his gender transition on the TLC series I Am Jazz and on his YouTube channel. On the show, Jazz's mother openly talks about the dilation process.
I'm worried about, like, her mental well-being and her dilation. The minute she leaves my house, we have a dilation problem.
That is a concern. When you don't have that watchful eye, they tend to go back to old patterns.
I have woken Jazz out of a dead sleep and taken the dilator and put the lubrication on it and said, here, you take this and you put it in your vagina. If not, I will.
This is how far we've come. A mother openly talks about raping her son's mutilated genitals in the middle of the night, and instead of arresting her, we give her her own show on primetime television. Now, phalloplasty, that is female-to-male transitions, are not much better. A phalloplasty involves the harvesting of one or more flaps of skin and other tissues from your forearm. Prior to surgery, you will need to undergo permanent laser hair removal or electrolysis on your arm or other donor site. Of course, the scars that are left behind from the skin graft are gruesome and unsightly, a constant reminder of your self-mutilation. And as many women can tell you, electrolysis is never permanent, meaning the hair from the skin graft often grows back in the urethra of your new penis and in the vaginal canal of your new vagina. Someone I talked to recently likened this to having hair growing inside of your mouth. Can you think of anything more gruesome? Both of these medical procedures are far from perfect. In fact, they're so far from perfect that after conducting my research on side effects directly from the trans community, I would only describe them as pure unadulterated hell. Over the past few days, I found myself in a dark web of nightmarish testimonies from male-to-female transitioners. Testimonies that led me to conclude that post-op regret is a fate worse than death. I'm gonna read a few to you now, but I will warn you, these stories may lead to a few sleepless nights. Regret over sex reassignment surgery. Good morning, everyone. First of all, throwaway account for obvious privacy concerns and whatnot. 3 months ago, I started this quote-unquote dream, nightmarish hell, that is SRS and its recovery. Dilating is hell. Everything is sensitive or sore. My f***ing leg movements are, while better than before, still pretty limited. I feel constant stinging and burning sensations pretty much around the clock in my crotch area. This is probably the most suicidal I've ever been since before I actually transitioned. This vaginal canal, which is actually a f***ing open wound, has given me nothing but grievances and I am tired of it. I've actually been considering asking my surgeon whether or not it's possible to just close this pseudo-vaginal canal or just get rid of it altogether. I wish somebody had told me even just a third of what a hell ride this was going to be. But nobody did. And now I'm stuck with this nightmare. I'm pretty much considering just stopping dilation. The canal will shrink, so f***ing what? Maintaining it is pretty much keeping my whole f***ing life prisoner of this thing. While I didn't like what I had before at all, it still allowed me freedom. Sure, there were some things I had to account for and have extra carefulness. For comparison, this shit is like going from parole straight into solitary confinement. Suicidal thoughts, 3 years post-op, SRS, and still having discharge and pain. I'm sorry for my incoherent rambling. I'm just all over the place right now. I had sex reassignment surgery in 2016, August, with Dr. Brassard, and I'm experiencing discharge and pain again from my neo-vagina after it had gone away for 2 years. Orgasming is very difficult these days, and when I do, I feel less than half of what I used to feel down there. I am normally a very strong person who doesn't easily give up, but over the last couple of weeks, I find myself crying myself to sleep almost every night, wondering why I had to get this surgery. Since the surgery, I haven't dated anyone, and everyone I have been on a date with turned me down diplomatically when I came out and discussed that I have a neo-vagina. I am not saying that no one should get this surgery, and I'm sure there are people who have amazing results, but far too often I hear that people experience complications from SRS. I find my life very draining these days. I have to clean my vagina with isobetadine to keep smell away and to keep the discharge at bay. I have to dilate once a day still. I should have thought things more carefully through. I thought SRS was a wonderful endpoint to a difficult journey. It opened up a whole other can of worms. I could have just had anal sex and left my genitals alone and maybe have the testicles removed. Doing something so taxing as having the tissues inverted turned out to be such a bad idea. I wish I could just have the vagina closed up at this point. I don't see myself ever having sex again either way. I know I should be grateful for having had a surgery of $22,000 Canadian paid for by the government, but I feel lied to. I feel so stupid. I don't blame anyone because it was my decision and mine only. I am responsible for having an uncomfortable life now because of my genitals, but I still wish there would be more disclaimers about this stuff. If my post is not welcome, feel free to delete it. This toxic and deadly gender ideology is being taught to our children in their daycares, in their public schools, and even in their social circles. Don't believe me? In her heart-wrenching testimony, Jamie Reed claimed that until 2015 or so, a very small number of boys comprised the population of pediatric gender dysphoria cases. Then, across the Western world, there began to be a dramatic increase in a new population. Teenage girls, many with no previous history of gender distress, suddenly declared they were transgender and demanded immediate treatment with testosterone. She says, one of my jobs was to do intake for new patients and their families. When I started, there were probably 10 such calls a month. When I left, there were 50, and about 70% of the new patients were girls. Sometimes clusters of girls arrived from the same high school, indicating to her that she was witnessing the effects of a social contagion. She goes on to say that their young, impressionable minds were so oblivious to the consequences of their actions that they often returned months later requesting reversals to very obviously irreversible medical procedures. She recalls one of the saddest cases of detransition she witnessed. An 18-year-old girl from a broken home with a history of drug use came in for a double mastectomy, only to return 3 months later to say she was returning to her original name and her original pronouns. Heartbreakingly, she said to the nurse, "I want my breasts back." We all remember being teenagers and behaving in ways we later came to regret. Weird haircuts, unsightly piercings, and questionable tattoos. Now imagine your bad decisions left you in an inescapable nightmare. When I wrote this video, I thought to myself, I've seen a lot of darkness in my lifetime. And the only thing that got me through those times of tribulation was the hope that it would soon get better. And it brought tears to my eyes to think that these detransitioners have no escape from the hell they've inflicted upon themselves. In their rock bottom moment, they will come to the realization that not only will their circumstances never get better, they will undoubtedly continue to get worse. Their bodies will continue to degrade, and their conscience will continue to remind them of the future they could have had if this evil agenda hadn't taken hold. These are the thoughts I live with every day as a mother who knows this attack on our children will get exponentially worse before it gets better. Now you too can live with these thoughts, and if you continue to support this ideology, you can live with the additional knowledge that you're responsible for it.